Flashback Twin Cities. Tom Osmond here in KLBB, Club Pill 20. Kyle, do you get a sense it's a time of year where everyone has that illness when it's coughing? It's, you know, it goes from 80 degrees to about 30 degrees in a matter of a few hours. And I think that people's health is matching the cloudy skies outside.
I would have to agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, using a lot of sanitizer and sterilizer here in the studio. But we will get through the next hour here. We have a lot to talk about, actually. We have a guest today, Jim Hayden, a former producer and filmmaker at WCCO-TV, will be joining us in the second half of the program. But I wanted to talk about some very important topics first, one being Newsapalooza 2 is May 7th. We talked about this last week, but because KLB is a proud sponsor of Newsapalooza, KCBD Now and KLBB AM present Newsapalooza 2, an evening of history and humor. We'll be at the Heights Theater on May 7th at 7:30 p.m., showing a collection of videos of historical and humor reference, along with myself, Jack Stallman, and a media panel with our own Stan Turner. Gary Gilson, Barry Zavan will be there, Kevin Berger, Brian Lambert, Ron Rosenbaum, T.D. Mischke, Ron Hanberg, and more. Bernie Grace, all guests on the Flashback Twin Cities program. They will be there to answer your questions and to discuss some of the clips played. The tickets are only $15. That goes to TC Media Now, which is a 501c3. A cause near and dear to my heart, as I plug that every week here on Flashback Twin Cities. But May 7th, $15. You can buy tickets at tcmedianow.com, tcmedianow.com. I'll also put a link up on the KLBB website. Okay, a couple other things. I'm going to read a list here, Kyle, and I want you to see if this is what you would think this list would be. This is the top 10 movies adjusted for inflation, so I'm taking inflation into consideration. Okay. The top 10 most successful movies of all time. I'm going to start number 10. Let's see if this matches what you think the top 10 list would be of all time. Number 10, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Yeah, I could see that.
I didn't think so.
I just mean as a Disney movie, it's probably guaranteed.
You are correct, but again, this is adjusted for inflation, so I didn't think that that was going to be the top 10, but it is, and adjusted gross for inflation, $904 million.
Decent amount of money.
Number 9, The Exorcist. It was a cult favorite, didn't know it was in the top 10 of most successful movies, but number 9, The Exorcist. Number 8, Dr. Zhivago.
I'm not familiar with that one.
That also surprised me, too. I don't think enough people are familiar with that one, but it's a quirky cultish movie. I enjoy it, but that just for inflation over a billion. Number 7, Jaws. You've seen Jaws, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Good, yeah, Jaws. Number 6, The Ten Commandments. And if you've ever been home on Easter, you've seen The Ten Commandments for about 5 hours.
Parts of it, yeah.
Number 5, Titanic.
That one doesn't surprise me.
That doesn't surprise me either. Next, you don't surprise me, but it's interesting the way the list pans out here. Number 4, E.T. Good one.
Okay.
Number 3, The Sound of Music.
Wouldn't expect that to be high gross. It's popular, but
I was also surprised at that one. This is from Box Office Mojo. Number 2, Star Wars.
Of course.
Of course. Number 1, Gone with the Wind.
Really? That beat out Star Wars?
It beat Star Wars. Adjusted for inflation.
All right.
Adjusted gross would be 198, almost a bill. Now, the reason why I bring this up today is because I, like many others, was downloading the Star Wars trailer. If you don't know, if you haven't heard of it, if you've not been paying attention to any of the news, a new Star Wars movie is coming out. George Lucas is not directing it or writing it, as he sold the company for a few billion dollars a couple of years ago to Disney. And, you know, we do a lot of Star Wars reference on this show, but now is a time where I feel like actually it's relevant to what's going on in the world. And I want to play two clips. The first clip being, this is the original Star Wars trailer that aired in 1977. So it's about a minute and a half long, and I think this plays quite well on radio. It's a bit different because there's no score written at this point. So let's take a listen to the original Star Wars trailer 38 years ago.
Somewhere in space, this may all be happening right now. 20th Century Fox and George Lucas, the man who brought you American Graffiti, now bring you an adventure unlike anything on your planet. Star Wars.
Here they come!
The story of a boy, a girl, saga of rebellion and romance. It's a spectacle light years ahead of its time.
I am C-3PO, human-cyborg relations, and this is my counterpart, R2-D2.
Hello.
It's an epic of heroes. And aliens from a thousand worlds.
It's a bit spooky without the John Williams score, isn't it?
It's
a haunting kind of feeling to it.
It's very different.
You know, and keep this in mind. This is a trailer people, again, you know, up until a few years ago, we only watched trailers at the movie theater. And trailers were shorter. You didn't download them. You didn't even see them on VHS tapes, which was a thing for a while. I remember when VHS tapes were at their peak of rental. You rent a tape, and you'd see about seven trailers for movies coming up. You could fast forward through them. But it's just amazing that movies did quite as well as they did, considering the distribution level is so limited. I want to play one more clip here before we get off on the Star Wars tangent, which we will move on to the topics today. But this is an interview, and I have a few of these, and some of these might be played at Newsapalooza. This is Carrie Fisher, and again, Carrie Fisher was the daughter of Eddie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds. Not a household name. Harrison Ford, not a household name. Mark Hamill, not a household name. He may still not be a household name to those that don't know Star Wars, but again, one of the most successful movie franchises of all time. This is Nancy Nelson. She'll be our guest next Saturday, actually, here on the show. Nancy Nelson on the set of Star Wars, or on the set of Fox, interviewing Carrie Fisher days after Star Wars premiered. We'll play it here.
And who seduced or asked to be seduced by Warren Beatty, which seemed a remarkably intelligent thing from my point of view. Carrie Fisher is now with us, and Carrie is the star of Star Wars. We were just talking about the fact that it's taken off even more than any of you had hoped for.
I never expected it to. I know it was a good movie, but I didn't expect the reaction to be like this.
I guess we might as well get it out of the way first, because it's inevitable that you're going to be asked about your parents. You come from a pair of very famous parents. Eddie Fisher is your father, Debbie Reynolds is your mother. I guess people would assume that it's obvious you would pick a show business career. Is it easier or more difficult because your parents have both been successful in it?
I don't know. I don't know how much difference it makes at this point. I don't think a director would like to be thought of as having hired someone because her parents were famous. But on the other hand, maybe certain directors would think it was an advantage. I can't see where the advantage would be, but I don't know.
Are your parents protective of you? I mean, do they like to give advice? They, well, now don't pick the wrong kind of role, Carrie.
They don't give that much advice in that way. My mother's more of a financial advisor. She's had so much trouble in that area that she's very adept now. You know, she's very knowledgeable in that area, so I listen to her about that.
There's no question that your credentials and your talent stand on its own. You were so acclaimed for the very brief performance in Shampoo, and now Star Wars has put you right into the category of a superstar almost overnight. It really has. I mean, it's just astonishing. But did you spend any years of your life being known rather than as Carrie, as the daughter of Debbie Reynolds, or the daughter of...
About 20 of them.
Did you?
Sure.
Is that something that ultimately you begin to resent or at least regret?
No, I mean, I think every kid...
And the full interview is on the TC Media Now Facebook fan page. You can check that out, and perhaps you can put it on the KLWB page. Pretty good interview. Days after Star Wars premiered, I don't think anyone, including the stars, including the studio, expected the overwhelming response to it. And again, the most successful movie of all time. Taken into adjust of inflation. 60 million downloads of the new Star Wars trailer so far. It's a lot of downloads of the trailer. Did you watch it?
I have not seen the second one.
No.
I watched the first one, though.
Yeah. first one was about 30 seconds, and you had about two visions of what was going on. And, of course, we'll fall for it. We download it. But this this one and Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, Mark Hamill, they're all going to be part of this movie. We shall see what happens. I don't think Disney wants to bust their budget, so I think that they will. I think that people will go to see it, and, you know, we'll all be there. Let's take a break. We have Jim Hayden. He's a former producer and filmmaker at WCCO-TV. We'll talk to Jim about his experience at WCCO and what he's doing now after this break here on KLBB Flashback Twin Cities.
When it's time for a new car, come and see us at River Valley Ford in Baldwin. The fuel-efficient Ford Fiesta and Focus deliver nearly 40 miles per gallon. The sporty Ford Fusion combines exceptional MPGs and mid-size car comfort. The best full-size car in the country remains the Ford Taurus with its unmatched quality and comfort. We've got the perfect car to match your lifestyle. Shop, compare, and find out why so many of your friends and neighbors choose River Valley Ford of Baldwin.
As their menu says, life is uncertain. Best to eat dessert first. At Sail Away Cafe, their desserts are so unbelievably delicious, you'll want to start with dessert. Gooey butter cake, chocolate ganache cake, homemade cheesecake, or key lime pie, to name a few favorites. But save room for some delicious homemade soup, homemade pizza, or dinner of pasta Adriatica. You'll be glad you did. Sail Away Cafe is fine dining with a hometown feel. So gather up your friends and meet at the Sail Away Cafe in Afton for dessert, breakfast, lunch, dinner, or live music on the weekends. Destination, Sail Away Cafe. Faye and Afton.
That new job may be right under your nose, but you'll never know if you don't visit JobsHQ.com today. At JobsHQ.com, you can choose from thousands of great local jobs at all different levels of job positions throughout Minnesota, Wisconsin, North Dakota, and South Dakota. You can also research employer profiles, watch videos, and search for your new job easily. If you need a job or are just looking for a better job, visit JobsHQ.com today. Your new job is waiting for you at JobsHQ.com.
We're going to talk about the Holy Spirit. That's something that most Christians don't know a lot about. It seems to be an enigma. This is Pastor Mike Carlson of St. Andrew's Lutheran Church in Matamidi, Minnesota, and we invite you to listen to our worship broadcast live this Sunday morning at 9 a.m. on AM 1220 KLBB Radio. Pastor John Straighten will explain that the Holy Spirit lives both in our hearts and in the midst of the Christian community. Our choir will be St. Andrew's Choir singing today live from St. Andrew's.
Flash at Twin Cities, Tom Osmond here on KLBB, and is our guest on the phone.
Yes, I am. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Jim. Jim Hayden, formerly WCCO-TV, and Jim, your present company is called, Planet Pictures. Planet Pictures. You did one of the things that, you know, we have a lot of guests here that lived in California, lived somewhere south. They came here to work, and then they stayed. You, of course, did something which many of us yearn to do between all months of the winter. You found somewhere nice to live weather-wise in the summer, and you lived there all year round. How is Los Angeles today?
We have a kind of a condition we get in the spring. They call it bloom. And it normally doesn't arrive until a little later, and therefore it's normally called the June gloom, but we're having it already. It's just kind of a cloudy, gray day. It's not what you picture at all for California.
Well, as a person who enjoys going out there, I think sometimes even that gloom with about 20 degrees warmer air temperatures is manageable. We are in what we call kind of that period here in Minnesota where everyone's coughing because it goes from about 80 degrees to 30 degrees in a matter of hours, and you leave the house with a windbreaker and come back needing a parka. But you know how that goes, coming from Minnesota and Duluth, and but here you are.
Well, I was born and raised in Duluth, and I spent 36 years living in Minnesota, and it wasn't until about a year after I left that I realized I'd been mildly depressed the whole time.
Well, we realized that many years ago here. We're still trying to trudge through it. Jim, let's talk a little bit about your experience at WCCO-TV. You came there as a young man and were fortunate enough to kind of step in there in the renaissance of TV news and local film documentary making. A lot of the documentaries are on TC Media now, and I get a lot of response from viewers and fans who watched those years ago. Those are, you know, mini documentary crews. Those are as good as National Geographic would be putting on their national series. Tell me a little bit about that experience, how you got into that.
Well, I just happened to have gotten a job when I was still a kid shooting news film in my hometown of Duluth. I worked for the CBS affiliate. And so that was, you know, at the age of 16, and I've never had a real job since. I wouldn't know what they're like. I've only worked in television my whole life. But those were absolutely golden years for local TV, and we were in the best market by far. And it's not just, you know, what do you want to say, a feeling of pride in the home team here. The entire industry regards WCCO as one of the best television channels there ever was. And those were the best years by far at WCCO as far as the investment that they made in local information and the investment that they made in a public that could really get information on television. Today, television journalism, for all intents and purposes, is really an oxymoron. There almost is no journalism on television. And now we also have the demise of the newspapers, and it's left our electorate, our American public, absolutely in the dark with regard to what's going on. But that's another topic.
No, we can get to that too. I think you know what? One thing I've talked to many people, contemporaries of yours from that era. These films, and I'll call them films because it was shot on film and they were transmitted via via satellite, via video, but these were not profit-making ventures. I mean, I'm sure they made money for the station. I'm sure they sold commercial time. But these were not, you were not going to, you know, put in X thousands of dollars and get that amount of money out. The credit to the station management, they were doing pieces as a public service and not as a profit-making venture.
That's right. And what you're talking about is a feature of America that's almost completely extinct today, and that is the idea of corporate responsibility, the idea of making a whole lot of money, because WCCO was making a lot of money. And in that era, it was very common for a management to say, well, why don't we give something back? Why don't we, you know, we're making a boatload of dough here. Why don't we do something good for the people that are our customers? And that's what my job was. There were at any given time at WCCO, at least a dozen of us, sometimes more, that were really charged with doing the best possible television we could within some constraints. But the constraints were, as you said before, at a level that's commensurate with network television. And you just will not find that anywhere in the United States today. It doesn't exist, as far as I'm aware. And it hasn't existed in many years. In 1983, there were 50 companies that controlled about 90% of the media. And so there was competition, too. We had to hold up a standard, and we had other aggressive broadcasters in town. They took a little different approach over at Channel 5. But nonetheless, they were spending money looking for viewers as well. They were stiff competition for us. Today, you roll the clock ahead, and six companies own almost everything. You mentioned in the previous segment Star Wars having been sold to Disney. Well, there's only five more companies you could have sold it to, you know, GE, News Corp, Viacom, Time Warner, and CBS. There, I've now mentioned everybody that owns an important stake in the media that the American public watches, and I don't think that's a good thing.
No, I think there's a lot of mixed results of it. And just a little bit of background, I think, and you know this, Jim, but the Telecom Act of 1996 was destined to create more competition and more opportunities for viewers. And I think that your sentiments is everything that we've talked about. We're actually one of the few locally owned radio stations in the metro area here at KLEB. We are family owned here, so we get to say a lot of these things about some of our competition that probably other stations would not be able to. But nonetheless, the 1996 Telecom Act, it's much like when we had the, you know, the Bell issue, you know, 30 years ago, and now it feels like the Bell system has already consolidated back to three companies now. We had one company, now we have three that controls all phone companies. But nonetheless, you know, back in the day when you were doing these documentaries, one thing that surprised me, and I get these tapes occasionally, you've been a good friend of our website and then others, the pieces you guys go after, there didn't seem to be a lot of fear of the ramifications. Today, I was surprised here in Minneapolis when we had some car dealers, we had some entrepreneurs that for years went by without any investigation had gone on until the FBI got involved and until it really blew up. The same people that were advertising heavily on local TV, local radio, even having shows on local TV and radio, and that's where the revenue came from. So why would you investigate where your bacon comes from?
Well, that's true. Yet we did that very thing, much to the eternal consternation of, I would say, some of the old school ad salespeople that we had at CCO. I was probably not their greatest friend, only because the kind of programming we did when I was there and the kind of programming I was able to do, given the freedom to do, included such things as an hour about the addictive nature of television viewing. And so now you have Dave Moore and, you know, a local television channel doing a documentary about how much of a disservice excessive television watching is doing to people. Well, I don't know if you could do that today or not. I like to think you could. That program ended up being rebroadcast as part of Bill Moyer's Journal. We paid five families to go without watching television for a month. And that was the first amazing thing to me, and that is that when we started calling people at random and proposing that they stop watching TV for a month because we want to do an experiment on how that hits families that are habitual television watchers, the first 25 people we called, I believe, said, "I'm sorry, you're not, that's not enough money." We offered them $500 and they said, "No, not to give up television for a month. It's not worth it."
Jim, one of the women that took that $500 actually emailed my site when I posted that video and discussed a little bit about her time doing that. And she did say her TV viewing was much reduced for the rest of her life after posting that piece. Her son, which was profiled in the documentary, had just graduated college at that point when she emailed me back on the site. And it's great when some of the people that you had filmed or worked with see these things years after. And this one, I remember one of the, I can't remember if it was something that was written about this documentary or not, but I think people said they would probably get divorced had the TV left their house. And that was $500 cash they were giving up for a month of TV.
That's it. And I'm pretty sure I can even guess who that might have been that you're referring to. And it's surprising because, in fact, her son was a toddler at that time, and he was, you know, very much left in the dark without, literally, I guess you could say, without the TV on. The interesting thing is how much change, lasting change, took place. We went back. Bill Moyers came in to Minneapolis, and he and I worked together on a follow-up program that aired nationally as part of Bill Moyer's Journal, as I mentioned. And when he came in, our crew went around and documented what life was like 6 months later. And there were a lot of changes, including one pregnancy that occurred. Apparently, let's just say that evening habits were changed.
You know, people actually talk or look at one another. Things can change. I have actually this audio from this. I want to play a little bit of here, Cuff. I want to just hit a little audio clip here. Let's see if you can remember this, Jim.
Good evening. I'm Dave Moore. What you'll be seeing tonight is a television program about television. The effects of watching television violence, television advertising, the effects of watching any television at all. When we began our research last August, the first thing we discovered was that this is a very tough subject to narrow. So, for starters, we'll narrow down to commercial network television. That leaves out public TV and local shows, but it still includes the programming 98% of you watch for 95% of the time. The second thing we discovered, science has a long head start on us. The list of studies and experiments is practically endless. At least 2,200 on television violence alone. But engaging TV's effects on our society, the researchers all share one handicap. There's no control group, no comparison community of Americans just like us, except without exposure to television. Well, that started us wondering what life might be like without TV. So we decided to devote a large part of tonight's program to finding out.
There you go. A Dayton's repairman comes to your home to dismantle your TV, your one TV, your wood console color TV with all your pictures on it.
That's right. And all of this, of course, was pre-internet by a generation, at least.
I'm just, do you remember who came up with the concept of this documentary, Jim?
I didn't hear you. What was that?
I'm sorry. Do you remember who came up with the concept for this Death in the Family?
I'm going to have to say that I did.
Well, it's pretty genius. And I just want to know what the bosses, even the bosses who, again, even if you're in journalism and you still know that your check does come from TV, and you go to the boss and say, "Look, we want to do this documentary, but we want to have people not watch TV for a month."
Well, I was blessed with a very unusual boss who had, as we said at the outset of this discussion, a very unusual set of senior managers to answer to. And they were unusual in large part because they trusted his judgment. And I'm referring here to the great Ron Hanberg, who would turn 100 shades of red if he heard me say that. He's a great journalist and a great manager of journalists who retired many years ago from WCCO, but he's still around. And, you know, Ron purposely kept his nose out of it. You could tell he was nervous. He was, you know, uptight. He was saying, "Are you just going to do a real skewer job, or what are you doing exactly?" But believe it or not, our scripts were not subject to approval above the unit that we worked in. We approved one another's work. We were pretty vicious with one another in terms of critiquing what we did internally, but no one ever came down with the authority to fire you and said, "Look, I want to look at this script before it goes on the air, and that's all there is to it." Believe it or not, that never happened.
It's pretty amazing, and if you want to watch this documentary, it is great. It is on tcmedianow.com. It's called Death in the Family, because TV was... I used to say that, you know, we knew TV people better than we knew our own family, because they were always there every night at one time. We were always back and forth, and, you know, when people were working late. You know, that really was, especially in the late 70s, 80s. You know, there was no internet. There was no really other media outlets outside of two papers a day and four channels coming in through an antenna. That was it. And to give that up was probably a frightening thing for people. And even the concept of thinking about not having a TV in the house, it happened, but there you go.
I think it's time to do a sequel, though, about the internet and electronic entertainment in general as it sits now in people's lives. Imagine if you had to go without the use of everything but the phone function on your iPhone and had no access to the internet for a month.
I, as someone who does not claim to be holier than anyone, I don't know if I could do it. I if someone offered me $500,000, not sure I could do it.
Yeah, well, you know, you'd probably lose your job and everything else. You'd stop getting emails. Your mother would never speak to you again.
That's part of the challenge. You know, TV, I mean, people did go on vacation occasionally and left TV aside for a little bit. I think that even when people are on vacation now, work follows them, the world follows them. There's no escape from anything right now. And again, not that that shouldn't happen, but it isn't happening. I want to ask another question. You also did a documentary which you provided to TC Media Now. Again, our guest today, Jim Hayden. Good news, bad news. And this, much like Death in the Family, I thought was very interesting that not only have you critiqued television in general, but also the main cash source for the station, which was TV news, locally produced TV news, which the high 10 p.m. ad revenue came from. And you did a more on Sunday, pretty much saying this is not the product that we want it to be or should be.
Well, this was the era when the consultants came in, and all of a sudden, everybody had a new haircut, and blow dryers were, suddenly necessary for your ratings. And the thrust of that is just that as you make the news into entertainment, you begin to lose the lifeline of information about what's going on in the world and, what's being done and what's being done to you. Let's face it, there's a tremendous motive of profit that drives much of mankind, and you can say what you will, it's probably always been that way, going back to when the trade was done with what? Precious metal or stones or shells, who knows? The point of that, though, is just that if the only objective is to do whatever makes the most money, and you can argue it because you're saying we're only doing it because this is what people want to watch, if that's your justification, then you're not going to cover stories that people need to know. You're covering the stories that they want to know. You're covering the content that's entertaining, but not necessarily important. How do you expect people to vote intelligently or object to actions that are being taken that affect them in a negative way if they don't know that it's going on? And in a very major way today, I think it's a happy accident, isn't it? Mm-hmm. That the corporate interest and the government interest is aligned in keeping people from knowing some things that are going on. It's better for them if we don't know. And if we just give people what they want, that's what's going to happen. You won't know.
We know.
That's kind of the thrust of that show in a pretty long-winded series of sentences.
We know what we think we need to know. And Al Austin hosts that. And one of the things he said at the end of this video, which also is on tcmedianow.com, is if you don't, I think it was something for the effect of, if you don't like what you see, tell us or change your viewing habits and we'll change it. Which I thought that's a pretty bold message, but I'm not necessarily sure if that was I feel like changing viewing habits would have driven viewers to other stations, then of course would have bring about more new consultants and probably fired everyone, but what do I know?
Well, it's like telling your kids eating the sugary cereals and asking for green beans, and I'll go and get the green beans. But it doesn't work that way.
When you left the More on Sunday gig, which was half hour documentaries, and people sometimes remember More on Sunday as being the 1990s kind of light feature series on Sunday mornings. No, More on Sunday, the original inclination was a very, very hard news, in-depth, sometimes 15 minutes to a half hour, single topic, single week documentary. I received one recently, and I popped it into the machine. I'm putting it on tcmedianow.com, and I'm going to be very careful on the air here. There was the miracle of life was happening on this video, and I had to do a triple take that what I was seeing actually aired on TV, and it did. Do you recall that particular moment?
You might be referring to a program that we did about childbirth.
Yes.
Natural childbirth. Yeah. Yeah.
It was not one that I didn't, tapes usually don't give a warning, especially when it's scribble tapes that I get, and popped it in, and I just was going about my work, and then, you have to turn my head to the monitor, and I was, as a childless person right now, I'd never seen this live, nor had I seen it on video or film, and, well, now I have.
Yeah, we probably did break some ground in a number of areas with the kinds of things that we had on TV. One program that we did generated, I know, in excess of 1,000 letters just based on one shot. It was a program about the phenomenon of people coming out of the closet and publicly professing their gay relationships. And there was one shot in that show of two guys in Loring Park just being, you know, appropriately affectionate. Certainly it would be if they were a heterosexual couple. And the phones lit up and didn't stop ringing for weeks. That did create a stir, largely because I wrote sort of a, I will just say, a overly opinionated close to the show, which, of course, was to be spoken in the voice and persona of Dave Moore, and thus, from the public's point of view, Dave Moore had taken a stand in favor of, the rights of people who are gay. And at that time, that was a tremendously controversial thing to do.
I think that would have been controversial 5 years ago. I think that has changed quite a bit in just the last few years, in Minnesota, other parts of the country. But I look at, 38 years ago, the same time period the Star Wars trailer we were playing here, even in TV and movies, that would have been taboo. For scripted TV and movies, you wouldn't put something and normalizing something like that onto, and again, with the most trusted man in Minnesota, which would have been Dave Moore, that could have been, for a certain segment of the population, betraying that trust of people.
Well, it was. Interestingly, the 1,000 letters that I'm referring to, and back in those days, the FCC, by the way, required that you keep those letters available in case a member of the public would like to look at them. So they were part of our public file. They were all in three-ring binders, and 1,000 letters is quite a pile of letters. Maybe it doesn't sound like much, but it really is. You know, two reams of paper, if you picture it that way. And what I think is important to mention is that half of those letters, half of them, were in favor of the program and what Dave Moore said.
That's surprising.
And not everybody that wrote because they were moved by anger. Half of them were moved by a feeling that what got said was the right thing to say.
Today when I think of people in either anger or in support, they're in their bathrobe with two fingers on the keyboard typing in a letter to or on a comment section to a online blog or a newspaper. But those were the days where you're typing on your manual typewriter or you're actually having to use a pen and paper to write a letter to the station on 9th Street. When you moved off the CCO or More on Sunday group to doing actually feature-length More reports, these were longer pieces. And again, the one I'm going to play a clip of on here is one that we've both discussed in the past. This is called Thy Will Be Done. I want to play just a clip on this, Jim. I want you to comment on it. Kyle?
Sure. Good evening. Our program tonight is anything but a rehash of the unspeakable tragedy at Jonestown. But as you will see, what we have to say goes a long way toward explaining it. The subject is the human mind, free will, and individual liberty. Frankly, we feel that much of what you are about to see and hear calls into question even the most basic assumptions about ourselves as human beings. Our story is about religious cults and the people whose lives they touch. We'll hear tonight charges of deceptive practices, charges of brainwashing, charges of human indecency. But above all, we'll glimpse the elements of bitter controversy waged on the battlefield of the human mind. We'll examine the claim that there are organizations operating right here, right now, which systematically rob free will and individual thought. As we stand tonight on the doorstep of the 1980s, it is difficult to imagine a subject of more fundamental importance or wider-ranging implications. We call our program, Thy Will Be Done.
In And just full disclosure, I still get nightmares of that graphic. I really do. It's a great documentary, but the graphic is what my nightmares are made out of.
Well, I hope it wasn't a little over the top then, but nonetheless, that was the dawn of the religious cult in this country, the Moonies and the Hare Krishna and the Children of God, and then I guess dozens of them that you couldn't even name. There were so many little ones. But we have that today in the form of ISIS, I would say. ISIS is a religious cult with guns.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of thought process that attracts people. Unfortunately, ISIS is a little more destructive than the Moonies.
Right. This documentary might have been kind of the start of TC Media now, because I remember watching in high school, and this video I had been watched for a few years, not to give my age away totally here, but I've been watching a few years, and I asked my teacher, I said, can I bring that home and dub it? Which she was shocked someone actually wanted to watch it again. And again, this is a 2-hour, what I think a Hollywood documentary or a New York documentary would be. It is, you go to San Francisco and look at the Mooney movement there. You are critical of businesses which are doing business and politicians are doing businesses with these, we'll call them cults. And also, I think, a very fair assessment of what the deprogramming was of cults. It was not, I wouldn't say it's a pro, pro-cult or a pro-deprogram, which is controversial at the time, still is. It was very objective, and again, it's a great piece of video if you have some time. It's getting summer out, but if you have some time on your computer, go to tcmedianow.com. Thy will be done. And I believe, Jim, you mentioned one of your favorite videos also.
Thy will be done?
Yes, one of your favorite videos also. I believe you told me that. I could be wrong.
I would say that's probably as good as I've ever been able to do.
Pretty good.
You brought back a lot of memories when you mentioned the business of this manual typewriter and all of that. It's amazing in a way that we ever got those programs done, because I used to sit in those days, this will really date it for you. I used to sit at my desk and oftentimes work all night, the last couple nights before a show went on the air, and I considered myself to be so busy that in order to chain smoke the cigarettes that I smoked at the time, and thankfully have survived and gotten off of long ago, I had a soldering iron that I hung so that it would sit just above my typewriter. And that way I could keep on typing when I lit my cigarettes. This was a different era in my life. So when you ask me, which program did you like the best? There's a lot of ways of judging the answer to that.
There's probably the one producing and the one watching. There's probably two different ways of that question. Jim, can I hold you over for one break and just a few more thoughts after our break?
My pleasure.
All right, let's take a break here on Flashback Twin Cities here on KLEB.
If you're going to serve walleye to Minnesotans, it's got to be good. The Tavern on Grand has been serving world-famous walleye since 1990. Come in for our classic walleye basket, walleye sandwich, or one filet dinner. Or try our WBLT. What does the W stand for? Walleye, what else? We make that filet to your liking. Grilled, fried, or blackened, and pair it with applewood smoked bacon, lettuce, tomato, mayo, on toasted wheat or white bread. We are located at 656 Grand Avenue, just a half a block west of Dale and St. Paul. We are open 11 a.m. till 2 a.m. daily. The Tavern on Grand, famous for walleye.
The 1920s were a golden age for baseball and custom-tailored clothing. That golden age is back at Jaime's Haberdashery in St. Paul. Jaime's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Make each visit uniquely yours with hats, suits, casual wear, and accessories. Visit their barbershop for a hot lather shave. It's the golden age again at Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at jaimes.com.
Club 1220 KLBB presents the Community Calendar. The Carpenter St. Croix Valley Nature Center is having its third annual birding festival this afternoon until 4. Bethany Lutheran Church in Star Prairie is having their annual Spring Fling Variety Show tonight at 6:30. The Stillwater Knights of Columbus and Tri-Parish Faith Formation Group are holding a pancake breakfast this Sunday at the Knights of Columbus Hall. It's from 8 until 1. Funds raised will go towards the World Youth Day pilgrimage. Non-perishable food items are also being collected. Hudson High School students are presenting the comedy Harvey tonight at 7 and Sunday at 5. St. Croix County's Earth Day celebration, Recycling Magic, is being held Sunday at YMCA Camp St. Croix in Hudson. It's from noon until 4. There will be a Good to be Green magic show. You can create crafts of recycled products and meet animals from the Carpenter Nature Center. If you have an item for the community calendar, send it to me, Jeff, at klbbradio.com.
Flash at Twin Cities. Again, my guest, Jim Hayden, formerly WCCO-TV. And Jim, you did this great body of work at WCCO-TV, and what made you leave for the sunny state of California?
Well,
that's a tough question.
Question in a way. When you think of a 12-second answer.
What opportunity took you to California?
To think of it. No, I had an opportunity to do something at CCO that I wanted to do, and I didn't just leave the documentary thing cold. I stayed at CCO for a number of years afterward and put together a consortium of local stations around the country that shared news, feature news type content. It was at a time when channels were adding a lot of news time to the air. You know, we suddenly had a 5 o'clock news and then a 4:30 news, and then the noon news went from 15 minutes to an hour and on like that. So people all over the country needed extra content, and I liked the idea of having the other great local stations, and there were a bunch of them at the time. I didn't think any of them were quite up to the same standard as CCO, but there was a lot of good work being done, and we arranged to share it among the stations. But I finally had an opportunity after that to go to Atlanta and work with the Turner organization, putting together what I think was also kind of a first. We did a program about the environment from the point of view of solutions, and until then it had all been hand wringing. So Ted Turner put aside a half hour for us to do a weekly show called Earthbeat, later changed its name and relaunched as Network Earth, and ran for 5 years on Superstation TDS, which got me to Atlanta. It got me out of the Minnesota weather, and that's when I realized that with sun, I'll have to say, I like myself better.
Well, you know, it's, as a person who's been to California many times, and I come back and tell the tales of it, it's nice. We have a lot of people in this who listen to this show who are probably listening in Florida, who have places in Florida or Palm Springs, and are here in the summer and somewhere warm like you in the winter. But no, there's we're very we're very humble people here in Minnesota. We carry a lot of that we'll call it that Swedish German guilt with us sometimes, that you shouldn't say that you appreciate warm weather. No, we can. It's fine. We can enjoy it.
Well, Minnesota is a very sophisticated place, and Minneapolis-St. Paul is a very, it's a tremendous community, great art, there's good food, there's great music, there's probably, I'll bet you the live theater in the Twin Cities is, if anything, a bigger and better thing than it is in Los Angeles. Honestly, even the severity of the cold isn't that daunting, but the duration of the winter is really, I'll say, really, that's the character building part of it, if you ask me.
Most years by 4th of July, the last snow has melted off the driveway. Jim, with Planet Pictures, you had a couple different projects that you were working on. I want you to just talk a little bit about those, if you'd like to just give a couple minute snaps that we're working on. Some pretty exciting stuff, I think.
Well, you know, we've been at it for 25 years, and it began when television was just becoming privatized in Europe. Up until the 1990s, most European countries only had two or three channels, and those were run by their government. And it took all the way until that time, those governments decided they would license private ownership for television channels, and overnight, these countries went from two or three channels to 10 and 15 and then 20 and then 25. So we became a supplier of content to the rest of the world. Interestingly enough, the beginnings of that content actually came from WCCO. I was able to acquire the archive of the television service I mentioned before, the local program network, and those feature stories that were done by local stations in the United States actually found homes in England and Australia and Japan and Italy and probably 75 or 100 other countries over the years. And we still do that. We produce some of it, but we also represent what we think of as being worthwhile fact-based programs. And I say fact-based because it isn't reality TV, it's right. Factual
right.
TV.
No, that's the misconception that documentary is reality, reality TV, and it couldn't be any farther from the truth, because I think that, and this audience is sophisticated enough to know that a reality show on network TV or on cable, that is the same as a sitcom, except they've just not paid the actors the wages that actors would demand in Hollywood.
No, well, that's it. And they've, again, you know, it is entirely profit motivated in the sense that the public is content to consume a product that costs a small fraction of what a good scripted program might cost. You're talking about the difference between, you know, a couple million dollars per show and maybe, you know, a quarter or a half $1 million for a show. And if the public is willing to sit still for it, the networks are more than happy to make the margin. And in a world where the audience is as fractionalized as it is, I mean, I'll tell you, between you and me and the cat, you'll never hear it from the television network. But in the industry, it's generally understood that television is on its way to becoming radio. And the audience has already left the TV room and got their heads in their laptops. So it's, you know, it's a new world now, and so there's all the more reason to try and economize if you're in that shrinking, fractionalizing market that is television today. It's unfortunate, but I'm really lucky that I was there for the best of it. We had the very best era ever when More on Sunday and the More Report were on the air. And those days are never coming back.
Jim, I couldn't agree more. And again, thank you for making quality programming. I really appreciate your work. And again, Planet Pictures is your new company. And your work can be seen at tcmedianow.com. I hate to cut you off, but we are actually out of time. This is Tom Osmond. We'll see you next Saturday on Flashback Twin Cities here on KLBB.